Good morning, everyone. Thank you for having me here. I think the discussions so far this morning have really been fascinating, and so I don't actually have a tremendous amount to add. I'm going to be fairly brief, and we'll have a little bit more time for OECD and the discussions. But what I'll try and do is maybe throw in a few perspectives for that conversation. And first point I want to make is that it's a very general point. Kind of as in most walks of life, really, the availability of information, the level of organization people have, and the motivation that they have to do something are really among the highest costs doing anything, really. And I think that applies very much also to trade. And so actually providing people with information, guiding them as to how to do things, and encouraging them to do that is actually massively, massively useful, and it's something which is massively undervalued. But to get on to some things which are kind of a little bit easier to evaluate, perhaps, and complementing what the colleague said earlier and what I think OECD is going to go into in a minute, many of you may know there is a enabling trade index which we pull together at the forum every year or two. The last version we brought out a month or two back, November 2016. And really what this does is tries to highlight many of the elements the cost data which is out there, the work done by colleagues, by Jan, by OECD and others, and also to bring in some additional data elements which come from a survey we do, which has around, I think, 15,000 or so business respondents from around 140 countries. It's got about 80 or so different indicators, and they're all just kind of put there and linking to the people who provide them. And it's sometimes interesting also to compare the somewhat different results you get from the business view of things with the legal situation as reported by governments. And it can show where there's value in putting in a little bit of an extra effort to implementing or communicating certain reforms which have been made or the most efficient way for businesses to actually trade. Sometimes they're not fully aware of everything which is at their disposal. Now, the key question, of course, is, well, you know, is all this data used? I don't want to oversell it, but I think the answer is yes, definitely it is in certain cases. There are clearly a fair number of ministries around the world who use some of these trade cost data as a KPI for their reforms. Multiple businesses do use it as a first guide, at least, for making investments. But I think particularly as really a structure to help them have meaningful conversations with government about what are some of the difficulties they face and how some of those difficulties might be overcome. And one other use, which I think is kind of the point of the conversation today, is about can it be used for capacity building assistance? And just to give one example there, some of you are aware of the Global Alliance for Trade Facilitation, which is a coalition of businesses and donors to try and provide or support developing countries with their trade facilitation reform efforts. And in the example of this piece of work, clearly lots of factors come into the choosing of projects, not least is requests for assistance from countries, the level of support which businesses are actually able to provide, and so forth. But one of the things which is helpful is this sort of trade cost data, and it's very much used in trying to help us identify what are some particular areas to work on. Now, I was asked in coming here to say a couple of things about e-commerce in support of Jean-Guy, and I'll try and distinguish here maybe extremely simplistically between e-commerce, as in the basically physical movement of product, but somehow enabled by the internet, and then digital trade, which would be more to kind of value exchange via digital means. So looking at that first one, what is different to classical trade? Well, the first answer is clearly all the same things still apply because you're still just moving, a product from one place to another. But we have to recognize a couple of distinctions. One is that the channel is often different. Much greater use of the postal channel or of the express panel channel, rather than some of the more traditional channels which use otherwise. These transactions tend to be smaller. The businesses and the consumers at both ends of the transaction tend to be smaller. And so anything but in the nature of an administrative cost weighs much more heavily than it would normally. Then, and I think this is really getting a little bit more to the heart of the issue, because we have these smaller customers and smaller sellers, and they're more distant, many of the things which used to happen at a local level are now happening cross-border. So really, you know, building the trust in that transaction, dealing with any complaints, dealing with returns of product, looking into these different ways of providing for payment, whether it's cash on delivery or other forms, making sure that the actual final cost to be charged to the customer is transparent as early as possible. All of these have to be dealt with differently, and many of our traditional ways of dealing with them, such as letters of credit and so forth, are no longer, you know, applicable for these types of transactions. Finally, and this is also gets to what Zhongyi was talking about, you know, a big impediment to a large number of people is just actually having that connectivity in the first place, or the skills to be able to interact and make transactions online. I think we won't really get into it today, but just to talk very briefly to that, you know, bottom half of this digital trade universe. Clearly, if we're looking at the data flows themselves, there's also plenty of other barriers which are apparent in terms of intellectual property laws, tax complications, competition policy issues, data localization restrictions, and so forth. Many of which, you know, require other sorts of reforms. Now, the good news, at least on the, you know, the first half of that category, is that there are plenty of metrics out there, lots of data which has been compiled by many UN organizations and others, on the connectivity aspects at least. So if we look at what ITU is able to provide, or the UPU or others, you know, there's some very good information out there. And the forum as well also provides a fair number of data points from business surveys on what matters in terms of the connectivity, is how easy it is to transact B2C type exchanges, you know, what is the overall efficiency of the border clearance process, and so how likely that is to weigh in the you know, the final cost of the product. But still, if we look really at those kind of pure e-shopping type environment, there is clearly less data and less understanding than there is of more traditional types of trade. And so that's an area that we're trying to understand a little bit better and provide some data around. Another area which we're trying to support with on the general trade cost data availability is in really getting some more actual cost data and time data. And clearly quite a lot of work has been done in this area along various trade corridors. And so, but we're trying to add to that, working with, you know, a variety of different products, moving in and out of a number of countries in which we're working in the first instance for the Global Alliance for Trade Facilitation. And this requires some fairly detailed business input from a fairly large number of businesses. And some of this data is quite sensitive, and so we have to be very careful how we structure that to make sure that we don't run into any competition concerns and so forth. And the data you see here, by the way, is fictional, just for exactly that reason, as we finalize some of it. Another area that we're working on a little bit more generally is trying to fill a bit of a data gap, which we see in terms of, you know, this real cost data or real time data, and the variability in that as well at a channel and a product level. The variability, as I like to emphasize, is really quite important, as well as just the average. And so again, we are working to pull together quite detailed transactional level data from a number of businesses who are willing to provide that and able to provide that at some kind of multi-country level for comparability. And maybe just two last points from me. One is that, you know, we're really convinced that all this data is really only has any value if it is accessible and usable to the people who might want to do something with it. And so we're working quite hard to try and create much more accessible and interactive dashboards, which really mix both some of the kind of that local context and ownership with this data, which is as close to real time as we can get it, so that it is more meaningful for decision making. And maybe a last point, again, back on the e-commerce front. We were, I like to say, kind of slammed over the head a little bit in Davos a couple of weeks ago, that we really need to focus on the connectivity aspect and the consumer friendliness of what we're able to provide in terms of supporting e-commerce transactions. And I think that consumer friendliness barrier is actually a very, very interesting one. There's a remarkable data point, which I think may come from the Internet Society. Apologies that I haven't put the name there. Which just shows that, this is data from Brazil, 70% of those people who are not using the Internet say that the reason they don't do it is, A, they don't have the skills, and B, they don't really have the interest in using it. And so I think that provides a very interesting avenue for further explanation into how we can help enable trade through this channel. So that's from me.